First pub we could stagger to was 12 steps from the plane. A virgin flight to Shannontown the day it didn't rain. The laughing eyes of Ireland sparkling blue and green, with hair as black as Guinness stout and barely 17. We're back out on the cobblestones, whiskey drunk and high again, liquored up and giving up for 7 nights in Ireland.
Hey everyone, I want to thank you for tuning in to the Jason Sloan radio show, powered up by Badfish Outdoors Media here. This is episode number 29. We're here sitting late April, getting ready to go into the game fish season, and have my old friend, Mr. Phil Schweik, on the phone. I haven't talked to him in a while. How you doing today, Phil?
I'm good, Jay. How about you?
Oh, I'm doing great. You know, I'm just like you, hoping for some warmer weather here to get these water temps going. I'm sure by you, because you're based out of central Wisconsin, a little bit different than us, but you're probably seeing the same type of weather pattern as we are, with the dreary, cold, rainy stuff.
Yeah, you know, it's not so much the warm weather. The water temperatures are actually surprisingly higher than you would think, but it's the rain. You know, our water levels are really high, especially with most of the fishing we do being associated with the river system, and it's made it for difficult fishing conditions for a lot of people on the river. So you have to use alternate, you know, presentations and things that you normally wouldn't be doing at this time of the year. By now, the heavy rains have gone, and we're getting into that post-spawn walleye bite and starting to look for those crappies.
Yeah, that's something up here. Our water level's as high as I can remember it, where there's standing water in the bogs, and there's even little depressions in the woods that aren't even associated with the lake that are like ponds now, which should lead to
right.
A good season for, I'm sure the mosquitoes are going to be really enjoying these conditions. But now, how do you alter your techniques to fish a high water situation on the rivers?
You know, it's funny you say that, because with really high water, what it does is it takes those fish that are in the main river channel and pushes them to the edges of the river, to the shorelines, tight little pockets, mm-hmm. little eddies, and then it pushes them into the backwater areas. Like with where I'm fishing, instead of them being in the main river itself, it'll push them back into Half Moon Lake, or it'll push them into Lake Dubay, or any backwater areas that are off the main river system. You know, calm water, current breaks and edges where, you know, maybe they can stay right off the edge of the heavy current. And sometimes it'll push them so far back that you wouldn't even think there'd be fish there normally.
Yeah, there's some, you know, we were out looking for some bluegills this weekend on some of the little pothole lakes up here, and with the water up after that drought, we had a lot of brush and more of that bog brush come up along the shorelines. And now with the water up, a lot of those bluegills are up in a foot of water in the brush almost where you can't even get to them.
Right. Same thing here. We're seeing the same thing here. Places you wouldn't even, you know, that normally wouldn't even have water is holding water and fish now.
Right. That's what we're seeing too. And now I've had some reports that the crappies have started up here too. Anything going on them down by you yet?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, you know, it's funny because earlier last week we had water temperatures that were in the mid 50s already, 55, 56, and then we got that cold rain and that dropped back down to the upper 40s. So the crappies had already started moving in. Now they kind of backed off. So they're kind of staged. They're in that transition area between where they normally spent the winter and where they would go to spawn. So we're finding them in anywhere from, you know, 6 to 10 feet of water, maybe 12 feet of water, just outside of where they're going to spawn. Now, with this last weekend, some of those fish started moving up, and we were finding them in shoreline structure and trees and stuff. Not the heavy numbers that you find, but a few of those crappies are starting to move in, and they were on that brush and stuff that was along the edges of the shore.
And what's your favorite way to go after them, you know, this time of year? Something new I tried last year exclusively. I usually use the crappie minnows, but last year I started messing around like I did years ago, but I went back to those the mini mite jigs, and I never had to buy any live bait all spring. How's the way that you actually target them this time of year?
You know, I like the way you're thinking with the mini mites, because when I'm fishing crappies like that, typically early in the year, it's simple. It's a bobber with a minnow suspended below it about a foot, 6 inches, depending upon how shallow you're throwing. But you're missing a lot of fish because they come up and they nip that minnow and they pull it off the hook. But I'm using the same thing you're using, a little mini mite with a pink head and a white tail, or, you know, a chartreuse and yellow tail or whatever. But when you're throwing that out there and you just kind of twitch it on the surface a little bit, it keeps that mini mite just kind of jumping up and down. When those fish hit that, you don't lose them. And you get much better hookup percentage, and you catch a lot more fish that way.
Yeah, and this whole thing about having to rebait, you know, you take all
right.
that time that's spent on rebaiting your hook, and you take that out of it, too. And, yeah, I was really impressed, you know, how that worked last year. Because, like I said, I fished them here and there with that in the past, but really used it exclusively last year. And that's another thing, you know, with the bluegills, you know, the simple hook and a bobber and a piece of crawler was always the go-to. Well, now they've got the gulp stuff, and you can basically take any type of gulp and break it up, and we catch just as many gills, and you're not having to rebait and get dirt all over the place, and that works just fantastic as well.
Yeah, we've seen the same thing, especially using the gulp red worm, those tiny
mm-hmm.
little red worms that gulp makes. Those have been just fantastic.
Yeah, it's funny how that's changed with not having to go to the live bait. Under most circumstances, sometimes it actually is better. You can't get around that. But now, how are the walleyes? How have those been going for you this spring so far?
The walleye fishing's been fantastic. I've probably had the best spring season I've ever had. Multiple big fish. And I mean, 8, 10, 12-pound fish. I had one with a guy a couple weeks ago. I should have probably had a scale on the boat. And measured it and weighed it out properly because it was almost 33 inches long and it had a 22.5-inch girth. I'd like to have gotten the weight on that fish. You know, that was probably one of those 15, 16-pound walleyes that, I don't know, it was a big, big fish. We've been seeing just some really, really nice fish this spring. Surprisingly, with the high water, you know, normally you're not seeing those fish as much as we did this year. Usually you get a couple of them every spring. This year it was just numbers and numbers of big, big fish. And I've had a lot of people call me, well, where in the heck are you finding those fish? And I said, kind of what we just talked about a minute ago, getting out of that main river channel current and finding these little pockets and eddies. And that's where these big fish are laying. And I mean right tight to shore, within 6-8 inches of the shoreline, just pitching the jig up there. They're just held really tight to the shore. And now that we're in the post spawn, it's still been really, really good. I mean, I was out with a guy on Wednesday last week, and we probably caught 70 or 80 walleyes just with a jig and minnow, working some of those backwater areas where they're in their post spawn areas now. So it's good. It's been good.
Yeah, I'd say that's, you know, I just always was, I guess the reputation your area had down there, you know, really wasn't a trophy walleye. I mean, lots of nice fish, you know, your 2 to 5 pounders, but why do you think you're seeing more of those big fish now?
I think a lot has to do with the size limit restrictions and the slot limit. You know,
right.
They're protecting those fish, and they're starting to grow up, and they're starting to get to that size where, you know, you're seeing those 8, 10, 12-pound fish and numbers
right.
of them. At least I am.
Oh, that's great. That's great. That really is a unique area that you got down there in central Wisconsin with the river systems, and it's an area that still people, they drive right by it. You know,
yeah,
and
yeah,
they don't,
funny, they do.
They don't realize the quality of fishery that's available there in the Wausau area. But now going into the next 2 weeks, you know, we're supposed to have some weather Wednesday night. It looks like a bunch of rain, and up here they're calling for it getting cold enough to, you know, change over. But how do you think, you know, going into this weekend, what do you think that a pattern would be for someone, you know, going out looking to get some walleyes?
You know, I don't think this weather coming in is really going to make that much of a difference. Those fish have already moved to their post-spawn stages, a lot of them. And, you know, we talk about the river system a lot. You and I talk about that quite a bit, especially the river system. But what we don't talk about is Lake Dubay. Even though it's part of a river system, it almost acts more like a lake. It has the river channel that goes through it, but it covers a lot of surface area. So it actually acts more like a lake. And that's where you'll find me spending a lot of my time fishing for walleyes, you know, the next couple of days, next week or two. Now that the river's still high, they're in their post-spawn stage. They've moved out of the river for the most part. I mean, there's still some fish in the river, but a lot of those fish have migrated back into the lake. And I'll be looking for them in shallow, flat-like areas with some stumps and some wood, probably 3 to 5 feet of water. And I'll probably start out casting some crankbaits through these areas looking for some fish. And once I find fish, then I may slow it down and work the area with jig and minnow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was always my favorite time of year as far as with that kind of stuff. I love catching them on crankbaits if you can. That I find right. that to be really fun. I mean, not that fishing with jigs isn't fun either, but, you know, that by a shallower stuff, you know, that's just so much fun when you can really get them hammering them crankbaits. And,
right.
Now, is there a night bite down there too, or is it mostly daytime, or is it all over?
You know, there is a night bite down here, but the bite during the day is so good, and I shouldn't say so good, but good enough that I really don't need to spend time out at night. I'd much
gotcha.
Rather and prefer to fish during the day.
Right. Oh, me too. Me too. It's just sometimes up here that, you know, there is that nighttime, your quality of fish goes way up, and we don't have the walleye fishery that you guys do, but sometimes that nighttime seems to be a key in the early season, and obviously we don't get going for another 2 weeks here. We get the late opener this year, so.
I think you also have the thing to do with the water clarity, where your water up there is crystal clear,
right.
and a lot of those walleyes, you know, aren't going to feed until low light periods. We're down here, the water's a root beer color, and, you know, they'll feed all day long.
Right. Right. That's great. And have you been seeing any action from any northerns or bass alongside, or?
You know, I haven't caught a bass yet this year. I know some friends of mine have been out, and some of our guides have been out, and they've been picking up some bass. So, yeah, the bass bite's been there, and we have caught a few northerns. And those are just incidental catches. It's not something that we usually typically target, but we have been picking up a few, you know, while we're working for walleyes.
Right. Right, yeah, that's – oh, and, yeah, the other thing I was going to ask you about catfishing down there. I'd probably ask you this in the past, but just to reiterate, that's something – I always love catfishing, and I think that's just because we don't have any of it up here. But, you guys got something good going on catfish down there too, right?
We have actually, it's surprising you ask, we've actually caught quite a few catfish already this year, Jay. Actually, a lot of them. You know, in the tailwaters below the dams. And that's one thing, you know, that the heavy current does play into, where the walleyes and the bass and the crappies, they tend to move out of that heavy current. Those catfish like the heavy current. The heavier the current,
mm-hmm.
the better. Just put on some heavy weights, get your bait down to where you think they're going to be, and start fishing. And you'll find those catfish. And they're literally everywhere in the system, from shallow backwater bays to mid-depth ranges to heavy current. It doesn't matter. There's so many catfish in the system. They're everywhere. They are literally everywhere. And white bass, too. You know, the last couple of years, we've seen an influx of white bass like you wouldn't believe. I had a group of guys out last year. I'm actually looking forward to this fight again this year, where they were starting to move up the river spawning. I bet we caught over 200 white bass in 4 hours in the river.
Wow.
Yeah, and nice ones, you know, 14, 15-inch, 16-inch white bass.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, anytime you can get into action like that, I don't care what kind of fish it is, if it's carp or suckers, whatever, if you're catching that many. It's fun, yeah.
It is. It's fun. But back to the catfish, though, those things are so strong and they fight so hard. If people only knew, you know, how much fun they were to catch, I think more people would be involved with fishing for them.
Yeah, now, how are they eating out of there? Can you eat them?
Yeah, actually, they're very good. I wouldn't keep a fish, you know, that's 30, 32, 34 inches long, but, you know, ones that are 16, 18, 20, 22 inches, they're perfect. They're really good to eat. They're easy to clean. I clean them just like I would a walleye. You know, cut behind the gills, slide the knife along the backbone, flip it over, take the meat off the skin, and cut out the ribs. You know, just like you would a walleye. None of this nailing it to the board with a spike and peeling the skin off. You don't have to do that.
You know, I could never figure out the advantage of nailing them to a board and pulling the skin off with the pliers. When we fished them, we did the same thing, just filleted them like you would a walleye. And skinned them. I'm like, why is this, you know, they're a pain in the ass to clean. And like, it's just as easy as anything else. I don't know.
I think maybe in the early days, you know, they're a little more difficult to clean, because when you lay them down on their side, those two fins that stick out got the strong bone in there, and they kind of prop themselves up, and they're kind of awkward and they're offset. So you just got to use a little caution and take your time when you skin them out. You know, they're just like a walleye as far as skinning them, but it takes a little more patience when you're cutting along there, because the bones are, or the fins are sticking up. Or I think in the early days, that's why they nailed them to a board, and they just grab behind them, peel the skin off, because those bones on those side fins stuck out so far.
Right. Yeah. Maybe that was it. I said I can never figure it out, but not the sharpest tool in the shed here. So, and then I want to talk a little bit about this thing you've got going up north in the Eagle River area. Why don't you explain to the folks what that's all about?
Sure, no problem. You know, we've been working with a group called the Conger Collections for a few years now, and they've got different rentals and real estate property around the Eagle River chain, like the Copperwood Condominiums and the Voyager Crossings and a bunch of other rental properties around the chain on the different lakes, Scattering Rice, Duck Lake, Catfish Lake, Cranberry Lake, that people can rent for a day, a week, a month, whatever. And so what we've done is we partnered up with them, and we provide trips for people that want to come up on vacation or corporate events or whatever they want to do, a family get-together, a bachelor party. And what we do is we sit down with whoever wants to organize the event, and we provide everything, which includes lodging, fishing guides, food. All the meals can be catered in from the Riverstone restaurant, which is right there in town. They have actual professional chefs that work there, so it's not like you're going to get a hamburger or a hot dog. You're looking at McFarland pheasant and prime rib and, I mean, really top-notch, first-class meals that you're going to get while you're there. We also set up anything with jet skis and snowmobiling and pontoon rides. Like I said, we got the fishing guides in the area, so it's basically make one call and we set everything up for you. So it's very, very convenient and very, very easy.
Okay, and this goes all year, right? If someone would need, you know, like ATVs and ice fishing stuff, you've got that all covered too?
Yep, we do ice fishing, we do summer fishing, snowmobiles in the winter, jet skis in the summer, whatever you want, you make a call, we can set it up.
Wow, that sounds great. And how can someone get more information on this?
Did I just lose you?
Oh, you may have for a second. I was just asking, how can a person get more information?
They can go right online and go to www.hooksetadventures.com.
Okay, you kind of dropped off for a second there. Why don't you repeat that? I don't know what's going on with this phone, but why don't you repeat that information for a third time and maybe it'll come through.
Yeah, I lost you there for a second, too. You could look up Hookset Adventures online, and that's at www.hooksetadventures.com.
Okay, and I will print that up as well on the info for this podcast. And yeah, so let's see what else I have want to ask you about this year. Any new lures out on the market that that you think might be worth a person stopping picking up, or is it just the oldies and goodies again?
You know what? I it's funny you say that because I actually went to the Wausau Muskie Show a couple weeks ago, and I did see some interesting new lures while I was there. There's the Dragon. I'm sure you've seen that by TNA Lures. And it's more like a beefed up chatterbait. Have you seen that one yet?
Yes, I have seen that one.
That one looks like it might be a good bait. I know years ago everybody liked the chatterbait as well as I did, but it just didn't seem to have the backbone it had. So I was particularly interested in that. And then Apache Triple Blade looked pretty good this year. I picked one of them up last year. I had really good luck with it. And what was the other one I picked up? And I'm trying to remember they're going to laugh at me for remembering the name of the company, too. Widowmaker Lures, I'm going to guess. They came up with a new design on a bucktail. Did you see that?
I have not seen that one.
Listen, it's basically an inline blade. Instead of blades that hang off of a clevis, the blade is actually one solid blade that has a hole punched through the middle. So no matter how fast you're turning the reel, that blade engages.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's one they probably want to take a look at. I mean, it's going to be good for amateurs and experts as well, because as soon as that lure hits the water, it's turning. And I know you as a guide have seen people in the boat with you, and they'll throw a bucktail out there, and they'll be bringing it in, and the blade just kind of flip-flopping back and forth, or they go into a figure eight, and the blade stops turning. Not
right.
This lure. This blade turns 100% of the time, no matter how fast or how slow you're going. It's turning. Very unique design. It's revolutionary.
Right. Right, yeah, that's another thing. Yeah, so How were the Muskies down there last year? And are they trending up, down, size, structure? What are you looking forward to this year?
You know, we had a really good year last year on the Muskies. We had the size, structure seemed to have jumped up a little bit. You know, and last fall we had high water, which I like in the fall because it pushes those fish into tight areas where they're going to be easily accessible, as to having low water with not much current where they're just all scattered around swimming anywhere they want to go. And we saw a lot of really nice fish. And another thing to take into consideration is last fall, they were doing some work in the dam here on the river up in Lake Wausau. So they had basically shut that system down. Lake Wausau was drawn down. There was no water coming through, or very little. The water level in there was basically inaccessible, so you couldn't fish Lake Wausau. So what it did was it brought the water levels up on the rest of the system and forced those fish into specific areas. And it forced me as a guide to fish different areas that I, again, normally don't have to fish at that time of the year. And we found some really nice fish, exceptional fish that actually I'm looking forward to applying what I learned last fall to this year and seeing what we can do.
Yeah, that's great. That's another underrated, I think even more underrated than the walleyes down there is your musky fishery.
Oh, my God, yeah. This is a phenomenal musky fishery. And like I said, people are on the highway, they drive right by every day, and they don't realize what they're driving past. They really don't. You know, the average fish I see coming out of Lake Dubé, and I'm not kidding you on this, average musky coming out of there is 42 to 44 inches. That's a big fish.
Yes, it is.
That's a big fish. Yes. I mean, not that you're not going to get a 34 or 35 incher, but the average fish is 42, 44 inches.
That's just phenomenal. And what is your size limit down there?
40-inch size limit.
Okay.
Not that people actually keep those fish, but it's 40 inches, which I think is healthy in the system, too.
Right, right. I figured it was 40. I just didn't know if they had any special regulations down there or not, like they're starting to do up here a little more on some of the certain lakes going to 45 and that. And then there's a push to get some of our trophy lakes up to 50, which, as you know, is always a battle up here.
Yeah, I think it would be a battle anywhere. But, you know, there's those people that want to keep them. And, you know, 90% of the guys throw them back anyhow. You know, I've actually had a lot of people ask me that question over the years. Like, you know, Phil, how many people have actually kept a musky in your boat? And when I mentally think about the numbers, and don't laugh when I tell you this, but I would say there's been 2,000 or more muskies caught in my boat. Okay? And out of those 2,000 or more muskies that have been brought into my boat by myself or my clients, there's only been 4 that have been kept.
Right.
So what is that percentage? Yeah. That's less than 1%.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not too bad. You know, and I always said, you know, like I'm one of the unsung heroes in the release thing is the replica technology has so helped that catch and release movement on these low-density fish that it's, I mean, you can't even really quantify it, because I do understand the guy that wants the fish on his wall. And now, you know, and I've known enough guys that have kept them over the years, you know, going back a little ways, where they sit in the freezer and the guy doesn't have the money and the fish ends up going in the trash. And now with the replicas, you can, you know, get that mount done 3 years later or 10 years later, whatever.
You know, it's you're right. You're absolutely right. I look at a mount on our wall right now that I had Joe Fatante do, who was an excellent example of a taxidermist who actually I consider an artist when it comes to doing replicas. And I look at that mount on our wall and I think, you know, that fish is still out there swimming around. And that was almost a 51-inch fish. Now, that was 3 years ago. So how big is that fish now? And the fact that we released it and the fact that I may catch it again, or my wife may catch it again, or one of my clients may catch it, I know where that fish lives, you know, I know he's released safely, I know he's still in there, but I still have the pleasure of going in my living room and looking over my fireplace, and there he sits, you know, beautiful replica of the fish we caught that day.
Yeah, I mean, that's another thing, you know, the guys like Joe and Rick and them guys, you know, it's not a cheap thing to get done, but, you know, they last forever now, and if you're going to get them out, you may as well go and pay the money to get the best in the business to do it.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, I have some mounts from when I was younger, and they didn't do replicas. Funny, I actually kept the very first legal muskie I caught when I was a kid, and it was 44 inches. And I still have that muskie mounted on my wall, but, you know, that's almost 30-some years ago. And it's cracked, and it's weathered, and you can see the age is worn into it, and it just looks old. I still love that mount. I appreciate that mount. But when you compare that to the new replica that I have that is going to be there forever, and it's not going to crack. It's not going to wear. It's going to look just like it did when it was first made 20 years from now.
Right, right. And there is, you know, some of the old mounts that are cracked that you see in the resorts. Those are kind of romantic in a way. I mean, because it shows the old, like culture of the resorts and the bars, you know, hanging these mounts up, and the derby days with the contests and the cash prizes for killing fish and all that. And yeah, I mean, we don't do that anymore, but I mean, that was kind of a neat era in its own right.
Yeah. Yes, it was.
So, hey, man. So, what you up to the rest of the day?
You have a good day.
Yeah. No, just working on signs and getting gear ready and heading down to the cave this weekend to cover that muskie tournament. So, like you said, this is when stuff kind of gets insanely busy.
You know, I saw those signs that you're doing. You do a heck of a nice job on those signs. Those look really nice. I saw.
Oh, well, thank you.
You just got done for a group, and those turned out really good.
Thank you.
Yeah, how was the walleye tour? When I saw that you were out there, too, how did that go?
Oh, yeah, the Erie one, it was great. It's always a good time seeing the guys again, you know, seeing guys like Keenan and Shakurit and, you know, some of the guys that I've known for years. And so that's always fun and all that. It was the bite was down. I think Tom had won it last year with 94 pounds, 10 fish. And this year I believe that the winning bag was 55 pounds. They had a lot of muddy water, and there was guys, I mean, the guy that was in first after day one, he didn't catch a fish on day two, so it was a little more inconsistent.
Wow.
You know, Shakura told me he didn't have a single, bite on the first day. So, I mean, you see guys like that can't get a bite, and then you know something's off. But, you know, in that tournament on Erie, someone's always going to weigh a 40-pound bag per day.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that was fun getting on the road again. And then, we go to Garrison, North Dakota in a couple weeks for, Sakakawea. So that'll be a fun one, I'm sure.
Gives you kind of a busy schedule, especially if you're heading to Cave Run this week. What do you expect out of Cave Run?
What was that? Yeah, I don't know what the hell's going on, but yeah, they got the Cave Run, PMT down there. Yeah, the muskie trail. So the guys are thinking it's going to be in a summer pattern, so the fish won't be packed up in the marinas like they usually are, which they like, because then it's not 30 boats in a small area.
Right, right. So, are you going to be at the PMTT in Eagle River?
I'm not sure. That's the weekend I get back from Rainy Lake. I'm fishing with the family up there. I'm going to try to make it for at least day two. Otherwise, McKeith will be there for the first day.
Oh, yeah. But he fishes it too, doesn't he?
No, he doesn't.
Mike Keith?
No.
Is that who you said?
Or Keith, the guy that I work with Outdoors First.
Okay. I thought you said Keith, and I thought you meant Mike Keith. He's there too.
Oh, no. Yeah. He films it while he's there. But anyway, man, I'm going to let you get going, and good luck this week, and we'll talk soon. Okay, now we have Greg Thomas calling into the show, and as a lot of you muskie folks probably know, he's one of the top guys in the industry, and the fish is all over the country, and we're going to talk about some Cave Run. How are you doing tonight, Greg?
Oh, I'm doing well. How about you?
Oh, I'm hanging in there, man. Good to talk to you. So is it as long a winter for you as it was for us up here?
You know, it wasn't too bad. I mean, it was kind of a nice winter down here. We didn't have a lot of cold, and definitely didn't have a lot of snow this year. So, I mean, guys were fishing a lot this winter. I can't do as much as I used to just because of sports shows and some of the things me and Tony Grant have going on. But, you know, it really wasn't that bad of a winter this year.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you about that later on in the podcast, but we'll bring it up now. Yeah, those road rule shows that you do and seminars, how are those going?
Well, they're going really good. You know, we do about 7 of them a year. It's all a one-day seminar, about 6 hours. We try to get at least a few speakers to come in. We do a new product review, which we show all the new baits underwater. I film them underwater, and we show them up on the big screen. And, you know, there's a lot of good raffles and a lot of giveaways and everything. It's been a really good thing for us, and we've been pushing to a lot of different areas this last year. We went all the way out to New Jersey and did one out there, and we do one in Pennsylvania. We're doing one in Ohio, Kentucky, Wisconsin, and Illinois. So it's a lot of running, but it's usually pretty good. A lot of guys getting a lot of good information.
Yeah, that is a neat opportunity for people that are, you know, either novices or maybe even further on that just want to learn from some local experts that you guys have coming in there. Now, when did you start, you know, getting on the cave this year and doing some fishing?
My first, excuse me, my first guide trip was in early March. You know, we have no close season down here. It's all year-round fishing. So, I mean, we rarely freeze. I mean, it froze very, very few times. But I've been out since about the second week of March, and it's been pretty decent. We had, you know, early on, the early bite was good, and then we kind of, right when the fish started to go in to spawn, which they don't successfully spawn here, it's a lot of stock fish, but right when the fish started diving into that, we had a nasty cold blast, and it kind of set us back a week, and the fishing got pretty tough there, but you know, I mean, it's the first spring. I mean, it's been pretty decent. I can't really complain. We've consistently been catching fish.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, that was always a neat thing. You know, when I used to come down and film with you down there and, you know, over with Chad over on Kincaid over there, that was always a really neat thing that, that people have that opportunity to go down and fish when it's unheard of. In the traditional range of the muskie up here, you know, they don't let us target the fish during the spawn because they are successful spawners. So that's the main reason that's allowed down there, correct?
Yeah, I mean, we don't really have a successful spawn. The fish go through the motions, and you know, sometimes they do take. I'm sure we have some natural reproduction here, but it's not enough to sustain a fishery. And
right.
So what they do is the DNR goes out and they shock up a bunch of females and they shock up a few males and they raise them in the hatchery. And then in October, they put them back in the lake. So our fish they're all, you know, our own Ohio Valley strain. They're not a, you know, some kind of strain that was put in here. They've been here for, you know, ever how long they started to swim. So it is a unique fishery that we got down here.
Right. So, you know, going back to the past a little bit, you know, you always came through for us on our ice fishing DVDs. Do you miss the ice fishing at all?
Not at all, actually. I don't think ice fishing is my calling. I like it a little bit warmer in my winter. You know, when you're not used to seeing ice and walking on water at you know, the whole Jesus thing. I don't really want to. I like my fishing from a boat, I guess.
Yeah, I think the comment you used was that the only ice that you usually saw was, you know, in a mixed drink at some point.
Exactly. That is my calling right there. It's not ice that I'm actually walking on. I can remember Cave Run freezing, and I've never seen the whole lake frozen, but maybe half the lake frozen twice ever in my lifetime. So.
Right.
I'm not into the frozen lake stuff like everyone else is.
Well, you know, up here you gotta do something with your winter, but yeah, so getting back to the cave down there right now, going to first, like the few times I was down there and fishing, you know, one of the things that made a difference for patterns and techniques, and that was the water level. And mm-hmm. What are you guys looking at right now as far as water level?
You know, the water is actually right where it should be. And by saying that, I mean that it's, you know, down here it's a flood control reservoir. They built the lake to hold water to keep, you know, the Ohio River from flooding and and thus the Mississippi River and all that. So it works on a bell curve. And some years, which you've seen, we've been 20 feet high, and that sucks. It's always tough and interesting fishing, but right now we're actually 2 feet low, which is where we should be in a normal year. So everything's good. Excuse me. The water temps are, you know, they're warming up. And the thing that's unique about southern fisheries is, you know, different from northern fisheries that I've noticed is, you know, as the water warms in the south, the clearer it gets. Whereas up north, you start getting algae forming and all that in your northern lakes. But down here, as the water warms, the clearer it gets. So right now we're in the low to mid 60s, and we've got about 4 to 6 foot visibility.
Well, that's probably more than I've ever seen when I was down there. I remember the one time we're down there, the flooding. Tony told us he's like fished by the outhouses, and we thought he was joking. and the water was actually up, or there were the outhouses and the dumpsters at one of the things, because the water was so high it was into the parking lot. So that's good to hear, I'm sure, for the guys going down there for the tournament this weekend, that it is at a normal pool, that or a little bit low even, and clarity, I'm sure. But what kind of the presentations this time of year are guys looking at
It's going to be more of a, or it seems to be going into like an early summer, late spring pattern, like what it should be, you know, still getting fish on jerk baits, stop and go baits, because the fish are coming out of the spawn, so they're not, you know, moving super fast. But it seems like, you know, stop and go baits, whether it be twitch baits or jerk baits, are working well. I do have a feeling, though, by the end of the week, they're giving almost 90 out here by Saturday. It might actually get some fish going on blades and top water. I mean, I got a feeling we're going to be seeing water temps near, you know, 68, 70 degrees by Saturday evening with this extreme heat we got coming in. It's supposed to start warming up every day starting tomorrow.
Oh, very nice. You know, because some of the guys I'm talking to up here, they're excited about this tournament being later than it usually is, because they didn't care for some of the years when it was colder, when the fish were in the marinas and the boats were all packed in there, and now looking forward to maybe more of a pre-summer type pattern where the fish are going to be spread out more. Is that something that you think will happen?
Yeah, I think people will be spread out some. I mean, the weeds this year are actually up. I mean, we've got pretty good weed growth right now. Being this early, the only problem is there's not a ton of weeds on the lake. There are some scattered patches, but, you know, a lot of the weeds are concentrated in certain areas, so I'm sure those areas will be getting beat up. But there has been fish caught in multiple areas, and I think it's going to be more spread out, which will be nice, because I like it when it's, you know, I hate when it's just pick a number and hope you get lucky catching one off a spot with, you know, 30 other guys.
Right, that's what some of the tournaments end up being, and I know that's not a favorite for the guys in the tournament, but, you know, not looking forward to give away the house on your tournament techniques there, so we'll let that sit. And then just going back a little bit now, you know, you're involved in the industry from top to bottom. Are there any new lures this year that you're excited about?
Well, there's a few that I've seen. That Revolution bucktail looks kind of interesting. I haven't had a chance to play with it too much, but it does seem to have a different vibration to it, which with bucktails, I think that's kind of the key. I'm going to be trying those this year. And, but, you know, in the crankbait realm, you know, there's a lot of basement crankbait builders out there now, and I've seen some this winter that look really, really nice, and I'm going to be trying some new ones. There's a kid, Chad Weiss, who's got a pretty cool-looking crankbait out that I've seen, and I'm going to be trying that. You know, the baits that have a little bit of walk to them and a little bit of movement to them, you know, those are what kind of what I'm looking for.
Yeah, was I looking at the one that Luke developed or helped develop for innovations that shad baits.
Yeah, the swimming dog. That
Did you get a chance to try that yet?
I caught a fish on it last week.
Nice.
It's the first fish I've caught. I mean, I just got them this year, so to be honest, I haven't thrown them that much, but I have been the last week or so, and got a fish on it last week. It looks really good in the water. It's got a lot of movement, a lot of head shake and wiggle to it. You know, those baits, it seems like the swim baits have kind of finally caught on a little bit in musky fishing, and I think that's going to open up some doors for some pretty cool ideas here coming down the road.
I agree. You know, we fish a lot of multi-species up here, and those swim baits, you know, for bass and walleye are, yeah, I mean, they're lights out. So it's the same thing as, you know, the bulldog is basically a big Mr. Twister. And so this, I think, will be something that may really change some things. Like you said, something new they haven't seen. I just get worried about that tail breaking off. You know, for a $28 lure for us guys throwing money down on these things. A little worried about that, but, you know, that's the nature of the beast with soft plastics.
Oh, it is. And, you know, musky baits now, I mean, they're just an expensive bait to buy. And they, you know, when you're throwing soft plastics, trying to catch something with giant teeth, I mean, you're going to have, you know, the not lasting is just part of the game.
Right. And then, yeah, that other one, that crankbait I was going to ask you about, that Livingston lures, have you seen those, the ones that have the transmitter in them?
You know, I haven't seen them. I was talking about them today with guys I had in the boat and stuff. I really haven't seen them. I talked to Herbie about them because I know he had a lot to do with it.
Right.
And you know, he was really high on it. So I'm sure I'll be trying a few of those this summer whenever I can can get them. It's definitely kind of a weird thing, you know. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see what that does in the water, that noise. I mean, talking to Herbie, he was talking that, you know, it was, it really worked for him. So, you know, we'll see how it goes on the different waters I get to fish.
Exactly. That's another, that's the one that I really do want to try. And they're reasonably priced for the guys out there looking for a lure to try. And up here, you know, doing some of the open water fishing with some trolling where you can throw that lure down and have a similar lure on the other line, and then you can kind of test it and see if it makes no difference or it does. You know, I'm trying to get some numbers for the year to see if it really makes a difference, but I am looking forward to giving that a shot. And then as far as the cave now, so you're down there through about June, early June, and then you head north, or what's your schedule this year?
The schedule is going to be, I'll probably be down here to like June 12th or 13th, and then I'll head up to St. Clair, where I've been spending my summers the last few years, and I'll stay there till, you know, about the middle or to latter part of September, and then I'll go to Minnesota, and I got a good live bait thing over there that I do for about a month and a half, and then come mid-November, I'll head back to St. Clair for a little bit and then finally come home. I spend about 5 months on the road these days, and trust me, by the time end of November, 1st of December gets here, I'm ready to get back to Kentucky.
So, yeah, that, you know, the musky nomads, you know, and I'm used to be there's more guys doing it now. I mean, you're still hanging tough with that. I mean, how's that tree as a lifestyle? Is that like beating you down, or are you rolling with the punches pretty good? Or
it's always done me all right. I kind of like moving around and traveling and stuff. So to me, I kind of enjoy it, and it's one of those deals now that I'm just, you know, it's just what I do. So
right,
it's definitely not something that anymore. I'm so used to it that if I wasn't doing it, it would be weird.
You know, imagine you've done it, you know, for long enough. Have you gotten off the thing of living off gas station food? Are you eating a little better now versus back in the day?
Oh, no, I still enjoy a good, you know, to me, a nice meal is a couple of Hot Pockets and something and roll aids. So it all works out.
Yeah, well, the one time I was on Mille Lacs with you and we went to that that bar and grill up on the north end there, and you said that was the first time you'd eaten anything with a fork in like 2 weeks.
Oh yeah, exactly. You know, when somebody handed me a fork, I started combing my hair. I didn't know what to do with it. But
oh, that was funny.
No, I still like doing the travel, and that's still a big part of the whole deal for me.
Well, if you're looking at it, you know, from the outside looking in, and if you know a little bit about it, that's the only way to maximize your season to the point where a guy can make a living. And then with the other stuff you do, and obviously in the off season with the shows and the road rules stuff, but you can't pretty much muskie guide. You know, the guys that say are based out of northern Wisconsin, they've got to do multi-species, and if you're going to do just muskies, you've got to be a nomad.
Yeah, exactly. You got to be able to move and look for the best bites and try to be, you know, on the best waters that you can be at the best times. I mean, that's just how it goes. You know, if you're not, then you're definitely, you know, you're going to be missing out. And, you know, and to keep a good clientele base and stuff, my whole deal with my guys is to keep them on the best waters at the best times. And, you know, that's huge for me.
Yeah, it's one of the things I've seen, trends in the guiding business, you know, not just here in northern Wisconsin, but everywhere. You know, the guiding business is down. It seems overall, you know, with the information out there, the electronics that guys can put on their boats and all this stuff, you know, a lot of guys can go the do-it-yourself route. So if you're going to be a successful guide, you really do have to be on those premium waters, don't you?
Oh, yeah, you got to be. You know, you got to be able to be where the biggest fish are and try to be there at the best times. And then, you know, and then bottom line is figure out how to, you know, get your guys to catch them. And,
right.
You know, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of moving. But, you know, like I said, it's all I've ever done. So it's
right.
Definitely something for me. It's something that I've done for a long time. So I enjoy it. It's still fun. So,
that's what I was going to ask. Are you still having fun at it?
Oh yeah, no, it's still fun. You know, I put in long days, but I'm pretty fortunate that I've got a real good base of customers that have been coming with me for, you know, this is my 21st year guiding, and I've got guys I've been fishing with for a lot of guys I've been fishing with for over 10 years, and so it's nice that, you know, it's like fishing with buddies a lot of times.
Right.
You know, and I know kind of what everybody, you know, you learn what everybody's strong suits are and what everybody's good at, you know, what each person kind of is better at. And that's huge when you're guiding because, you know, you want to make sure you give people the best opportunities.
Absolutely. And that is, you know, where the guys that have been in it for a while, they you know, they got their clientele to where they are like friends. And of course, it makes the job that much more enjoyable for the guide too. And then, you get to learn each guy's strengths and weaknesses, you know, and cater to that. And then you're on a big fish water and maybe have a pattern or two going. But as far as trends now, like trending, say, in the quality of fishery, like what's going on, do you see any? We'll take the Minnesota, for example, you know, how you were always the Mille Lacs guy starting out and then, you know, all that. How do you see those fisheries trending right now?
You know, I think they're kind of leveling off. I mean, some of those fisheries that, you know, they all went through the peak, you know, and I was there for a lot of the peaks. And, you know, that's just fishing that I'll probably never experience again.
I was there,
you know,
too for that.
Yeah.
That was good stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was great stuff. It made a lot of cool stuff. And, you know, I think now they've kind of settled into what they're going to be. You know, they're still going to be very good fisheries. You know, Mille Lacs is never going to be this numbers of big fish fishery, but it's definitely going to house, you know, probably the biggest fish in the state. And it's, you know, somebody, you know, there's going to be a few real big fish caught there every fall. That's just part of it. And, you know, Vermilion's going to have its good weeks and bad weeks. And, you know, if you're out west where I am now, it seems to be just a little more consistent, and it may not have the super big upper end fish, but it's definitely got a lot of really nice fish. And that's why I spend most of my time out there chasing those fish rather than, you know, fishing the bigger lakes where, you know, you get skunked more often, but you do get a chance at a really, really nice fish when it comes, but it just doesn't come that often.
Right. Now, back in the day, I think I was with you, I think, your first day ever on Mille Lacs when you had the crest liner, and it was pretty rough. And that was when I had all those stitches in my mouth. I got punched in the face and was having to pull stitches out of the mouth in your rearview mirror. But I remember we were out there for like the first spot for 10 minutes, and when we raised like a 48, and I'm like, that's the biggest fish I've seen all year. Then when we filmed with you and Luke, and it was on that eel bait on those mm-hmm. flats, and we saw that first day, we saw like 40 fish.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was insane how many nice fish, you know, 44s to 49s with the occasional, you know, a bigger fish. I mean, they were everywhere on those flats, and that was a pretty amazing thing to see.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was just one of those fisheries that we'll probably, like I said, maybe never see again. I mean, I hope to one day, but, you know, it was just one of those fisheries that was, you know, there was a lot of big fish. You could catch them a lot of different ways, and you know, the options were there, and the size was there. And, you know, you got to see them, and a lot of people got to see them. And so, I mean, it was a great thing, but like I said, it was a fishery that was never meant to be like that. It was a fishery that was stocked,
right.
And, you know, it was stocked at one fish per 13 acres, but it basically went unfished for a long time, and those fish got a chance to grow up and get big. And now, you know, with the popularity of musky fishing and with the information that can be spread with urgency like it is now, I mean, stuff probably doesn't happen that way anymore. So
no,
it's going to be, like I said, I don't know if I'll see a fishery like that again, but, you know, maybe one day. Who knows?
Yeah, that was, you know, and then the unfortunate thing, you know, we really didn't know what we had when it was happening. And I don't know if you hear about, you know, how back in those days you were seeing that occasional freak Wisconsin strain fish show mm-hmm. up. Are those fish all dead now, or are there any of those still showing up?
You know, I honestly don't know. I mean, most of the fish that I see out there in pictures are from, you know, look like big Leech Lake strain fish.
Right.
I don't know, and I haven't really talked to the guys. Really haven't said, you know, what, you know, if they've seen the big barred fish anymore or anything like that. But it's I'm sure there's, you know, I'm sure there's probably a few, but I don't think there's that many.
Right, kind of needle in the haystack. Those fish really carried some shoulders. But anyway, Manuel, thanks a lot for calling in tonight, and really appreciate you doing this. And I miss filming with you guys in the old bad fish days. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was a blast getting, you know, we got a lot of nice fish on film and a lot of good stuff. It was fun. We had good fisheries, good filming. It was... Everything worked out great.
We are just a bunch of young idiots as far as on our end anyway, you know, having some fun and showing some of the real stuff that goes on. But that was, I mean, you were the first guy to film with us, and we always appreciated that, you making time for us. And I think we helped you out too, so it was kind of a mutual thing, but we're always very...
Oh, yeah.
Appreciative that you gave us the time and rolled out the red carpet for us anytime we showed up. That was a lot of fun, and that's another one of the things, talking about the Mille Lacs thing that you'll never really see again, and you'll never see another, you know, gig like we had going with, you know, the guys like you and Luke and Tanner and Ty, and you won't see that coolness ever again, probably.
Yeah, it'll be a while if it ever does, but hopefully one day, you know, hopefully one day. But before we quit here, I just wanted to say, too, if anybody wants to come down here and try some of this, they can always look me up on Facebook at through Greg Thomas, Greg with two G's, or go to battlethebeast.com online and look at the website if anybody's interested in coming down or help going anywhere in the three places that I fish every year.
Well, I wasn't going to forget that. I was going to slip that in, how to get a hold of you and all that. And if you guys want to go fishing, have some fun. This guy's been at it for a long time. You know, he's a veteran muskie angler at the young age. You're what, 28 now?
28. Oh, I'm 38. I'm gonna be almost 40, old man.
Well, for your 40th birthday party, let's get together and go to Cincinnati with Tony and have some fun.
Oh boy. Well, I'd like to see 41. I don't know if that would, if that's the best way to do it.
Right. Well, cool, man. Well, thanks again for calling in, and looking forward to seeing you this weekend, and hang on the line for a second. And hey, thanks everybody for tuning in. I think we got a good one here. A lot of good information between Walleye Guide at the Hook Setters, hooksetters.com with Phil Schweik and Greg Thomas at battlethebeast.com. You can check these guys out. They're the best in the business. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you.
Tell me just one more time the reason why you must leave. Tell me once more why you're sure you don't need me. Tell me again, but don't think that you'll convince me. Before falling in love again, you'd rather be dead. 'Cause when someone breaks your heart, you